It's time now for the Truth Restoration Bible Study Conference Call. You'll hear various Bible teachers as guests, and you'll also have an opportunity to voice your thoughts. We record every Wednesday at noon Pacific time. Join the conversation next week. Visit truthrestoration.com to find out how. Now, let's jump into today's study.
Hello, thanks for joining us for the Truth Restoration Bible Study Conference Call. Today, we're going to be discussing a couple different topics. We're going to continue where we left off last time with the topic of who is Israel. And we looked at a lot of verses last time. We may just go over some of those. And if there's something that anybody did not get to mention and you'd like to, then by all means, jump in here at the first part of the call. And then afterwards, we'll go on to the conversation of the New Testament church and what did that look like and look into some things there. So it should be fun. I'm going to go ahead and just start, and I'll just get us started by opening this up in prayer, and then we'll jump right in. So, Father in heaven, we just thank you for this day. We thank you for this opportunity to discuss your word, and we just love your word, and we thank you for the scriptures, Father. We thank you for giving them to us and just for the freedom that we have to study them openly and to discuss them and to search things out. We thank you for all the blessings that you've given us. We ask that you'd bless our time and help us to be humble in our conversation, and that you'd help us to just be open to whatever truths you might have for us in our discussions here today. And we just love you. We praise you in the name of your Son. Amen. So I wanted to start out with a verse that we looked at last time, actually in a little bit more depth, but I just wanted to reread this one verse in Ephesians chapter 2, and then we can open it up and continue on. But chapter 2 of Ephesians verse 19 says, "Now therefore you are no longer strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God." So I think that that is a key verse when understanding the, you know, there's neither Jew nor Gentile and being grafted in, and the whole conversation in Romans chapter 11. And I know, again, we looked at some of these things last time, but that whole chapter, Ephesians 2, and especially that verse to me says a great deal. And so anyway, I just wanted to open up as well. If anybody has anything they'd like to share from that or from last time regarding who is Israel, and then we'll continue on from there. Does anybody have anything at this point?
Yeah. You know, there's Israel, the physical lineage. Right now, what we know is pretty much Judah, Benjamin, the Kohanim, which were Levi, and we know of some that claim and are accepted as Manasseh. So, you know, after that, the rest of the tribes, I don't think we know. I don't know if there's a way to tell, because they were, you know, from the diaspora, they were pushed out. So we had the 10 tribes go one way, and then the two main tribes go a different way, and figuring out who those are as far as physical lineage. And then we have God's Israel that Paul refers to in Romans and in other places. And that's pretty much anyone who, you know, is finding themselves to him, calling upon his name. And that would be that. What I understand as the new creature through the seed is God's Israel as well. So we always have to check to see, you know, who are we referring to when we say, you know, Israel. Am I grafted in, grafted into the natural branch? So therefore, I'm grafted into natural Israel, partaking of certain promises as well as certain curses. So some people say that. Other people say, no, that there are no longer any curses, there's only the promises. So I guess, you know, that's really the question, right?
Yeah, and, you know, if I was to summarize my thoughts on it, which I don't believe I did last time, my summary, if I had to say who is Israel and kind of answer the question, I guess at this moment, the way I would answer it would be something along the lines of Jacob was the one that whose name was changed to Israel, and then his people, Israel, were basically anybody that was from Jacob, like a descendant of Jacob, and of course we have the 12 tribes, but anybody was from those 12 tribes or that was like Caleb or like we talked about others, Rahab, that were brought into the 12 tribes. So it could be anybody. It could always have been anybody. The way I see it is it could have been anybody in the past. It could have been a Gentile from, you know, some faraway land back at that time, and I think it's the same today. It could be anybody that joins themselves with the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and basically with Israel, with believing Israel. So And then in Romans, it gives the idea that not all Israel is Israel, and then it gives the idea that all Israel will be saved, and it's like, what is he talking about? But I think it's pretty straightforward, but basically, the way I see it is that, you know, if just the natural branch, being a natural branch doesn't mean you're actually part of believing Israel or you know, the Israel of God, like you referenced there, Sean. So the natural branch still has to be believing and still has to have, you know, they're still saved the same way. So anyway, whether it's a natural branch or a wild branch that's grafted in to Israel. So that's kind of the nutshell, I guess. So it, like, to me, it's in a sense, it's always been the same, and I think it's still always the same. I don't think there was any real, there were definitely, in my mind, some changes that happened, you know, in around Acts chapter 1 kind of a thing, but it didn't change, like, who was Israel. I don't believe so. That's kind of my take on it. But
personally, I think what changed was what made you, you know, part of Israel. And it's very similar as to what we see with Caleb and Rahab and Ruth. They're very similar, right? There's a common element, which is that he will be your God. So that's the believing factor. And partaking of the grafting in, you know, how are we grafted in? Well, there's only one way, and that's through the seed of the promise, because you're grafted in because of the promise. And that was the promise that was given to Abraham. So there's a covenant that was made with Abraham. And by being a partaking of the seed, which is Yeshua, then we're part of that Abrahamic covenant in a sense, right? Because we're part of that promise that was part of that covenant. But we have a new covenant when we are those people. So it can get really convoluted really quick, right? Because people say, well, then what are you talking about, the Abrahamic covenant? Which the sign of that covenant is circumcision. So then you end up in that rabbit trail, right?
Yep.
And but there's these elements that remain is what makes you Israel. And, you know, there, to me, there's no doubt, just like you said, there's no doubt that we are Israel. Now, what does that mean to us? Am I natural born Israel? Well, I happen to be, right? But you might not happen to be part of natural born Israel. Mm-hmm. But we're both common in one sense, that we're both believers in the seed. So we're common in the faith, which makes us that new man, which is not Judah nor of the house of Israel, but we're a new man by virtue of belief in the promise. So we're benefactors of the inheritance. So by being part of the natural born, grafted into the natural born, then we're also part of the promises that the natural born are also able to receive as an inheritance, because they broke their covenant as well. And this is the only way back through to the Father. But they remain in a natural covenant that's still there. And there's promises that they're still benefactors of, and that's of the land. So anyway, it can get convoluted, and you kind of have to put pins up on the wall to follow that path.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, does anybody else have anything they wanted to add to that?
Hi, this is Tom.
Hey, Tom.
I'm not sure if it was mentioned, but Messiah told his disciples to go out to the lost sheep of Israel, the tribes of Israel that were in dispersion after the time of Solomon. In northern Israel, 10 tribes were separated from Judah and Levi, and they went into captivity before Judah went into Babylonian captivity, and northern Israel never returned. And when during the time of Messiah, there was only Judah and Levi mainly, and some small groups of Israel left in Jerusalem at the time of Messiah. So he told his disciples to go to the lost sheep, the missing Israelites that were scattered among the nations. And that's where, in the letter of James, he actually states that there were the tribes in dispersion or scattered abroad. So they generally knew where they were, where they had traveled to. And I'm just making a guess, but I think that the Apostle Paul, when he traveled to Spain, he was going to one of the locations where it was a well-known shipping port called Celtic Iberia on the coast of Spain that was an Israelite port. And it was used by a lot of other nations, but it was one of the areas that they traveled by sea. So I'm just guessing Paul went to that location to locate some of the Israelites. So there's other areas you can track the history of the lost tribes of Israel. Different people have their heritage backgrounds that they trace back to Israel. So they are real descendants from the family tribes of Israel.
Yeah, it is very interesting. You mentioned, I think you were referencing this verse here, Matthew chapter 10, in verse 5, it says, "These 12 Jesus sent out and commanded them, saying, do not go into the way of the Gentiles, and do not enter a city of the Samaritans, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And as you go, preach, saying, the kingdom of heaven is at hand, heal the sick, cleanse lepers," and he goes on. But, I mean, I find that very interesting. And the other one is over here in Matthew 15, I'll just start in verse 21. "Then Jesus went out from there and departed of the region of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a woman of Canaan came from that region and cried out to him, saying, have mercy on me, O Lord, son of David. My daughter is severely demon-possessed. But he answered her not a word. And his disciples came and urged him, saying, send her away, for she cries out after us. But he answered and said, I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And then she came and worshipped him, saying, Lord, help me. And he answered and said, it is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs." And I know you guys know the rest there, and I could keep reading, but it's always intriguing. I'm always real curious to see what other people think about that verse there where he says, I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Kind of a big statement.
Another interesting connection is that the Apostle Paul usually went to synagogues that were scattered throughout the Roman Empire first when he would declare the gospel. And often there were Gentiles that were being converted to the Torah, the commandments of Yahweh, and to the Jewish proselytes, or people going out and spreading the message of Yahweh and his law to the Gentile nations. So Paul would encounter many Gentiles that were already learning about the commandments and the law, and so they would often listen to the prophets better than the Jewish people who would reject the message that Paul would be spreading as he went to the different synagogues. So he did do the same thing as the disciples. He went first to the Jews, to the lost sheep of Israel, but I'm guessing that travel to Spain also included reaching out beyond the Jewish people.
So when you're saying Jewish people, it seems like you're referencing that as like all of Israel, but like I'm thinking like the Jewish people would be the house of Judah and maybe basically the tribe of Judah and Benjamin, and then the other 10 would be kind of like the lost sheep of the house, like the house of Israel. Is that the way you see it there, Tom?
Well, no, I was just saying he went to the Jewish people first because it was an easy way to make contact as he traveled,
okay.
And then he encountered Gentiles that were already learning about the Torah and turning away from pagan beliefs or the false gods and turning to Yahweh. But after he was rejected by the Jews, then he spread the message more to Gentiles. But I'm just saying that traveling to Spain and possibly Celtic Iberia, that port was connected to, especially to the tribe of Dan. That was one of the ports that they helped to establish when they left from their homeland in Israel. They were the first to depart from Israel, and some of them went by sea. And to historical reference, that a lot of people believe the Irish are the tribe of Dan, and then the Scots were a blend of the tribe of Dan plus the last daughter of Judah, Jeremiah's daughter, Tetefi, eventually married one of the kings of Dan in Ireland and became the tribe of Scots and traveled to England. And so there was this connection to Dan in Celtic Iberia. That was one of their early settlements before they settled in Ireland and England.
Just regarding like the scriptures here, does anybody else have any other comments? I'm curious to see, maybe Sean, I know you've said a few things here, but in Matthew 15:24, where he says, I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel, like the way I personally reconcile that with the idea of whosoever will is that, in other words, in a sense, it's like whosoever will is part of the lost sheep of the house of Israel, so that they wouldn't be willing, I guess, maybe if they weren't. But I'm not saying blood-wise, I'm just saying they become one of the lost sheep that's, you know, brought back and grafted in or whatever, I guess. So what do you have any other comments on that there, Sean?
Well, it's real interesting that we have differentiations going on there. Within that context, it says, well, you know, don't go to Samaria, and for I've only come for the lost sheep of the house of Israel. So don't go to the nations and don't go to Samaria. Well, so here's the problem. In reference to what Tom was saying with the idea that they knew where these lost tribes were, right? That they were scattered in other nations, but they knew, they still kind of knew where they were at that time. Well, the problem is Samaria is a blend of people that didn't get cast off into Babylon. They stayed back and remained. So some of these people are the ones that even Jewish scholars and rabbis would refer to that we know are brothers, and they'll refer to Samaria. And Jesus makes a reference that he says, you worship on that mountain and we worship on that this mountain, right? And but there'll be a time, you know, and we know the rest. And so this was a reference to the temple on the mountain for the Samaritans. And the Samaritans or the Samaritans, there's two different groups of people there. But when we say Samaria, there was a mountaintop in Samaria where they had a temple built. And they did the same things to the same God, right? So they had their own priesthood, and they had their own temple. And this was a reference that Jesus was making against. And there's a lot of literature that's out there on this group of people. And they basically, they believed that they were the true Israel because they believed their form of worship and the things that they did was unadulterated. And unlike the Pharisees and the Sadducees, they were carried off into Babylon, and they came back with some added things. And so this fight between the two types of people was pretty much based on their forms of Judaism. And Jesus, we see Jesus making a reference to this when he says, we know what we worship. And this was a politically charged statement on what Jesus was saying. And she answers back basically saying, I know that there's a Messiah and we're waiting for his, you know, for him to come. Well, this should tell us that this group of people were practicing Jews, as it were, right? They're waiting for a Messiah. They worship the one true God. They believe that they're doing it right. So I'm saying all this background to the point of, well, Jesus made this comment as they're a separate group of people, still somewhat belonging to the house. But he says, don't go to the Gentiles. Don't go to Samaria yet, right? Both of these are conditions of yet, because I have first come for the lost sheep of the house of Israel. So now we've got four groups. We've got the house of Judah, the house of Israel, the Samaritan, and the Gentiles, or the nation, right? So we just actually made this issue more complicated.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that answers the question. It took, for me, it raises more questions.
Yeah.
This is Tom. Can I say something about Samaria? That
sure.
If you check the Old Testament, when northern Israel went into Babylon or into Assyrian captivity, there were several times when the Israelites were conquered and different groups were taken off to captivity, and most of the northern Israel was removed from their land. And then the Assyrians like to transfer people from other areas and put them into lands that they had conquered because they were already subjects. And those people that were transferred to northern Israel, it actually tells you the exact cities they came from in the location of Sumer, which is north of Babylon. So they actually were not Israelites. They were the people of Sumer, and that's why they're called Samaritans. And so they tell where they came from. And the other problem is when they came to that land, they were worshiping false gods, and lions were coming after them, wild animals were attacking them. So they asked, well, why is this happening? And they wondered, what is the god of this land? So they actually then asked, I can't remember who it was, told them they needed to know the God of the land, Yahweh, and how to worship him. And so that's why they started worshiping Yahweh. And they were not Israelites. They were directly from the Babylonian, you know, pagan culture, the Chaldeans area. And they were not Israelites. And that's why Yeshua called them dogs. They pretended that they were descended from Jacob. They were not. They tried to worship Yahweh of the land, but they were not. The Jews knew that they were not worshiping Yahweh. They knew they were not Israelites, and they rejected them. They considered them unclean. It was a big separation between them. So that's a different viewpoint than what Sean said, maybe controversial.
It's definitely a different viewpoint. It's definitely a different viewpoint. And the peoples that I'm talking about have archaeology to back it, anthropology to back it. They were people of the house of Israel that were left behind. There are two different groups of people. If you look at Sumerians and the Samaritans that were in the area, they're not the same people. They're two different groups of people. And they did worship. They did consider their own priesthood. The reason why there was this animosity is if you look back through the history of the 10 tribes and the 2 tribes, they started doing things their own way. They had their own king, as we well know. They had their own priests. They even were changing the feast days and trying to worship God in their way, the way that they chose to do. So these were diametrically opposed people of the same nation. And these were remnants of those people that were left behind. They did not get carried away. Not all people got carried away. And you're going to see this if you look in Nehemiah and Ezra in the rebuilding of the temple, and you'll see these conflicts of these people. These weren't people that were transplanted. These were people that were already there in the area, and they beckoned out to the king, basically sent out the reports that, hey, these people are doing this, and we don't want them doing this. They were trying to stand in their way. So the story unfolds, you know, that it actually worked against them. And the king put out a note, said, no, you guys better just keep your mouth shut. We're going to let them build it. Not only are we going to let them build, we're going to use your material and your money to build it. So these weren't the transplanted people from the kingdom of Babylon. These were people that were already in the area. Because the king wouldn't say, well, you're going to use your money. If they were transplanted from the kingdom, then it would still be his money.
All right. We'll take a short break for just a moment, and then we'll be right back to continue and begin to discuss the New Testament church and how does that look and all the various things that we can talk about regarding that. So anyway, we'll be right back in just a moment.
Simpson University, the Christian University of Northern California, announces its newest degree, the Master of Arts in Organizational Leadership. This distinctive graduate degree offers a unique concentration in nonprofit management and prepares graduates to function as highly skilled ethical leaders in a wide spectrum of organizations. We'd like to share more about our unique programs for developing the leadership skills in demand today. Speak with an enrollment professional now. Call us at 1-888-9-SIMPSON or visit us online at simpsonu.edu/lead.